Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Good morning, everyone. How many of you have ever been summoned for jury duty? Oh, one or two of you. Wow. So you'll be able to relate to this. You know, a few years ago, I was summoned for jury duty and I made my way there. And I was about as excited as you were when you went to jury duty. Not. And you know how it is. You get there and there's nothing to do but sit and wait. I'm sitting. I'm waiting. And, you know, I know it's going to be a while. So I just start letting my mind go where it wants to go. And my brain begins to think about being in a jury room, being here, signed up for a jury duty, and wondering if I had been called to serve on the jury of a young man who the night before had gone into a church in Charleston, South Carolina, and shot 9 people. And the question that came to mind was, wow, Tracy, what if you were here and you were being called to that jury? Do you believe that you could be fair, impartial, when this young white man has now shot 9 black people who were simply studying the Bible and praying? And I took a breath and I thought, yeah, I think I could. It wouldn't be easy, but I could do it. And then the next thought I had was, if that were a young black man and he had gone into a white church, do you think you could be on that jury? And I quickly said, absolutely. And the next question my brain asked me was, do you think it would even get to trial? Would he be alive? And I was sad and tried to stop thinking. But my brain was on a roll. It was not to be denied. And so the next question my brain asked me was, what if it were a young white man going into a Jewish synagogue? What if it were a young Islam man who went into any kind of church and shot 9 people? And the questions kept coming. What if it was this combination of people, or this combination of race, or this combination of gender? And it felt a little overwhelming. And all of a sudden, I felt someone touch my arm. And it brought me back into the physical present, because my mind was off in mind land, brain land, human thinking land. And I felt this arm touch, I felt this hand touch my arm. And I thought, what? And I looked, because, okay, you've been to jury duty. You know that you start out, you sit down, but you make sure there's an empty seat on this side and an empty seat on this side. So I'm like, who's touching me? And I look and I come present, and the man who was sitting a chair away from me touched my arm. I looked at him and he said, are you okay? Is there anything I can do? Which made me think that's a weird question, but I realized as I was thinking that there were tears coming down my face. that thinking and imagining of in our world today, how are people treated? And how are people treated based on physical characteristics that may have nothing to do with their character, their personality, their intentions, their dreams? And so he asked me, was there anything he could do? And I turned to him and I said, actually, yes. I'm okay. But what I'd love for you to do as a white man is tell everybody you know, every chance you get, that you have had it and that it is not acceptable to you that black people are killed simply for the color of their skin. I had no idea when that happened and when I went to jury duty that day that I would have this encounter with this man. I had no idea that the events of the previous night were going to touch me in that way. I had no idea that I would have the opportunity to encourage someone who was a stranger to actually take action. But this is an example of what heart-centered social engagement looks like and feels like. This annual theme within Centers for Spiritual Living of spirituality in action, and this month focusing on empowerment, allows us today to look at this idea of what does heart-centered social engagement look like. If you're like me, then when you hear the phrase social engagement, you immediately go to activism, political action. Oh, I've got to write letters. I need to be protesting in the street. And those are all good things. And there is a place for them. And some of us in this room might find ourselves doing those things. But true, deep social engagement is living your daily life in a way that expresses spirit, that expresses the divine and the nature of the divine in the way that you engage with individuals and with groups in the world. Social engagement, the way that I think about it sometimes, it's like living the spirit of namaste. Social engagement is like living the scripture from the Bible that says, when you see me, you see the Father. Social engagement is living in a way that after people engage with you or interact with you, they recognize that you are living your life from the mindset that spirit and I are one. Social engagement means that we are living our daily lives in a way that represents or models spirit in action. In my latest book, Stained Glass Spirit, which is all about becoming a spiritual community where oneness does not require sameness. We don't have to be all alike in order to behave in a way that represents unity and harmony and wholeness. There's a section that is titled, Inclusion Requires Action. And one of the quotes at the beginning of the section is this one. To be an upstander, you must wake up, suit up, show up, and speak up. Be an example of what it means to raise the vibration and lift up humanity. This is what social engagement is really about. Every one of us can be engaged in the social uplift of the communities where we live and the state and the region and the nation and the world. It doesn't require any special training. It doesn't require any certifications. It simply requires a decision and a commitment to live in a way that represents those deepest spiritual beliefs about oneness, about wholeness, about unity, about harmony, about all of the qualities of God being expressed in, as, and through you out into the world. Now, the way Ernest Holmes talks about this is, Ernest Holmes says, the greatest good which our mind is able to conceive should be affirmed as a part of our everyday experience. We should venture forth into a life of action with the will to do, the determination to be, and the joy in becoming. So often we make the mistake of thinking that all we need to do is pray. I'll meditate on world healing and wholeness, and that's important. But Ernest Holmes reminds us that the greatest good our mind is able to conceive must be affirmed as a part of our everyday experience, how we live, the actions that we take, what we do. And often we shy away from that because we're not exactly sure how to make that happen. So when I was in jury duty that day, or summoned for jury, I never got assigned to a jury, but I got my own lessons that day. I found myself encouraging the stranger next to me to be engaged socially in a way that he could do. And he said, I can do that. I will do that. I don't know if he did or not, but in that moment, he made a commitment to be the example of love in the world and to actually take some action. I also took action as a result of that day, because a lot of people kept saying to me over the next 4 or 5 days, well, Tracy, what can I do? Like, I want to do something. I've turned away too long. I'm not really one to, like, go get in a march or anything, but what is there something I can do? And for 4 or 5 days, I found myself over and over and over again just talking to people about, well, who do you interact with? Well, what do you do for a living? Well, where do you work? Well, and we would brainstorm things that they could do that were actually examples of social engagement that they had not thought of or that they had not realized could make a positive difference. Another example of a time where I was able to build a bridge between the idea and the moving forward was actually a couple of decades ago, but lately it's come to mind for several reasons. And I live in Dallas, Texas, and the conversation began innocently enough. A client that I was working with at the time pulled me aside and she said, Tracy, you know, would you be interested in helping plan a weekend leadership conference? And I was used to being asked to do things in the community at that time. By that time, I'd probably served on about 12 different boards of directors. And I was a consultant working on leadership development, team building, and customer service. And so I was like, tell me more. And she said, well, we want to create this leadership conference in the community. And we need people who really are solid with leadership and have really good presentation skills, but I really want you to be on the planning team because this is the first time we've done anything like this. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm in. So then she says, after I've said yes, oh, by the way, this is a conference for the LGBT community on leadership. Are you still willing to do it? And I didn't really hesitate. My answer was yes immediately, but I had questions later. So the person who asked me was at that time a very visible leader in the LGBT community in Dallas-Fort Worth. And because she was my client and I had worked with her and I was working on team building and diversity issues in their organization, she knew that I was heterosexual, cisgender, and she, you know, asked me because of my area of expertise. And then she felt she should tell me what I was really saying yes to. That didn't matter to me at first. But what I learned was as I got into this role of being a planner, I recognized, again, my brain asking me questions, like my ego asking me questions like, well, what do I really have to offer? Like, I'm not a part of that group. I'm not a member. I'm not going to fit in. What if my clients, when I go to raise money for the conference, which was part of the requirement she also didn't tell me as being a part of the planning team, but as we're getting into it, oh, every planning team member is required to help raise a certain amount of money. So, of course, oh, well, I'm going to call some of my clients and ask them if they'll be sponsors. And then my brain goes, oh, what if my clients think I'm a lesbian because I'm working on this conference? Now, that's the ego, right? That's the brain. On a conscious, intentional level, I'd already like that. I'm in. I'm yes. I'm doing this. This is what I do. And I don't have any issue, I don't think. But my brain did. My brain started thinking. And I answered all of those questions on a conscious level and kept moving forward. And then finally, my brain changed to what I call, instead of ego questions, changed to authenticity questions. Am I willing to walk my talk? Like, Tracy, are you willing to walk your talk? You say that you believe in inclusion and that everyone should be included and valued and treated with mutual respect. Are you going to walk your talk? Yes. Am I willing to be the minority? My brain asked me that question. You're going to be the minority at this conference. You're in the minority on the conference team. Now, when my brain asked me that question, you might guess, I laughed. Like, why are you asking me that question? I'm the minority by race and ethnicity almost everywhere I go. But I'll be a minority in a different way. Am I willing to put myself in that position where I don't know all the things? I'm not going to be automatically right. I've got to ask more questions. I've got to watch for different cues. And the answer, of course, was absolutely. I will choose to put myself in a position where I am the minority because it is a learning experience for me and it is an opportunity for me to walk my talk. I can't walk my talk if I'm not doing what I tell others to do. And the big authenticity question that came up, am I willing to be an example of love and respect? The answer was yes. That doesn't mean it was easy. But we had great outcomes. By me making a commitment to being engaged socially in ways that maybe were not automatic for me or easy for me and really were not required. They were optional. If I had not said yes to that conference, the conference would have still happened. But that was the first Leadership Lambda conference in the state of Texas. It was followed by a 9-month leadership development program that I also got to help plan and present as a part of. There were promotions in the workplace for people who had attended the conference, and they were sharing their results. And it was so exciting, and it was so great to know that I had contributed a little bit to that change. There was the creation of several nonprofit service agencies that grew from that conference. There were, within 3 years, people who had been at that conference and had picked up leadership skills and communication skills who were now running for and being elected in public office. There was the birth of several coalitions between differing communities, differing identity groups, with an intentional inclusion of people from the LGBTQIA community. And so it is so amazing to know that the seeds that have been planted through social engagement can bloom and blossom in ways that I could never have imagined. And for 15 years, that continued. And all I could say was, I'm glad I said yes. What is it that you might want to say yes to? Maybe you don't know exactly what to do. Maybe nobody comes right to you and offers you an opportunity to step into action. And so you ask that question, what can I do? Well, if you can't think of anything, I invite you to look up or go to the Center for Spiritual Living Global Vision. Because in the Global Vision, there are 15 examples of ways to be involved in expanding the vision of love and light into the world. And there's going to be some aspect of that, whether it's working to end homelessness, whether it is viewing and contributing to a world where everyone has food, whether it is related to race or gender identity or sexual orientation. There are ways, and there is a way for each one of you to be that light in the world, to be able to come forward and be a representation of the CSL Global Vision of contributing to and creating a world that works for everyone. It doesn't mean that everybody gets their own way and everybody gets to do things the way they want to do it individually. It means that we create standards of life and living that represents the wholeness and the quality of life that has been intended. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to what is yours to do. We've got about 2,000 people on a public Facebook group that we ask ourselves that question specifically related to ending race-based hatred and violence. But that question can be applied to any group or any theme. What is yours to do? And whatever you do, do it from love. Do it in love. Do it as love. Know what your motivation is. It's not to look good. It's not because Tracy told you to go do something. It's not because Dr. Edward has charged you. It's because from the inside out, you know what you are for. I recently wrote this piece, and I'm trying to decide what to do with it, but so I'm sharing it as it refines itself, and I want to share it with you today. Are you against racism, or are you for respect? Are you against hatred, or are you for heaven on earth? Are you against politicians, or are you for democracy? Are you fighting a nagging problem, or are you forming a new pattern? Are you blaming the poor, or are you building a bigger pool? Are you against injustice, or are you for inclusion? Is your attention on destroying lack, or is your attention on demonstrating love? Are you complaining, or are you creating? Are you trying to fix the world, or are you trying to demonstrate the world that Spirit has already created? Heart-centered spiritual engagement is about living love. Heart-centered spiritual engagement is about moving from namaste to ubuntu. Namaste is two individuals looking at each other, noticing and saying, the God in me, the beloved in me, sees the beloved in you. That's really beautiful and powerful. And it keeps me still separate from you. You're over there, and I'm here. And we come from the same source, but we are two. Ubuntu is a South African principle and philosophy that basically means I cannot exist without you, or I am because of you. I am who I am because of who you are. And so Ubuntu does not allow us to be separate from one another. Ubuntu requires us to behave in a way that I know everything I do has a direct impact direct or indirect impact on you. So I'm just going to invite you, if you're able to stand and to simply turn to someone near you and to look at them and to bow and to say namaste. And then to choose the same person or someone else and either hold out your arms to them, or if you're close enough and comfortable, to hug them as you whisper to them, Ubuntu. Namaste. Namaste. Ubuntu. Please join me in prayer. In this moment, what I know is absolutely the truth is that there is only one life. That life is always seeking to express and expand itself. It is the all-knowing. It is the all-present. And it is expressing right here and right now as each one present. In fact, it can be no other way, because it is expressing as all of life, every form of life, not just humanity, but every blade of grass, the sun that is shining, the earth as it rotates on its axis, every drop of water in the ocean, everything that is alive, every plant, every animal, and every human being. And so it is easy for me to claim and declare right here and right now that everything having the seed of the same source within it is a part of my namaste to the world. That namaste is a great acknowledgement and a beautiful acknowledgement of the existence of all life. And for that, I am grateful. I also speak my word for the philosophy of Ubuntu, expressing in every word spoken, in every thought, every activity, every relationship, because that is the point of the blessing, of knowing that it is mine to do, to step into social engagement, because that which I do expresses life and love and touches every form of life and every human being on the planet. So I choose right here and right now to step into that way of being in service in the world, recognizing I cannot separate myself from any other. And so I must not turn away. I must not simply rely on spiritual practice. I must do as Ernest Holmes has taught us. I must treat and move my feet. And today I am willing to commit to do that. If you, like me, are willing to make that commitment, if you, like me, are ready and willing to lead from a place of gratitude and move into action, being socially engaged in a positive way to create a world that works for everyone, then I invite you to repeat after me. Aho. Amen. Amen. Shalom. Shalom. Ashe. Ashe. And so it is.
So I'm a little bit beyond words at the moment, but you'll hear more from Tracy after our offering. Now is one of those times that we recognize that there is a divine circulation in this creation, that we give and receive from an infinite source that is alive as that life force within us and through all things. So I invite the ushers to stand, and I invite you to take your gift in your hand or place your hand on your heart if you give in other ways. And repeat these words after me. I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.